Welcome to NLP Talks with Laura Evans, a podcast for people looking to unleash their potential in business and life. I'm Laura Evans, international trainer of NLP and host for this podcast series. Join me for insightful interviews with people that know firsthand just how NLP can change lives, and they'll share with you tips and strategies to help you clear your path to success. Stay tuned. Hey, how are you doing? Thank you for joining me. I hope you're safe and well. Thanks for tuning in for another amazing episode. I can't wait to reveal today's guest. I am, of course, Laura Evans, your host for this podcast, and of course, the founder and lead NLP trainer at Unleash Your Potential here in the UK. Now, today's guest is Dr. Kay Spooner. Now, Kay trained in NLP with us last year, starting in January last year, and she did her master practitioner in November of last year. She is an anesthetics consultant within the NHS and also has an educational and support role within the trust that she works for. I was particularly excited to get Kay to come on to the podcast because how she has taken the NLP toolkit, particularly the language skills, and has used them and integrated them into the way that she helps other people on a day-to-day basis, I just think is amazing. I've also asked her to talk about how she's used NLP to help her trainees in what is a very highly pressurized environment. You know, as an anesthetics professional, you know, people are literally placing their life in your hands during operations. And also she's been using NLP to help herself and her colleagues during this COVID pandemic. I'm so excited. So let's cut across to where Kay starts to talk about how she accidentally came across NLP at an anesthetics conference many years ago.
Well, actually, my journey to NLP started years ago. And I went to, it actually did start through anesthetics. I was on a conference and somebody was, was talking about the fact that patients are in quite a vulnerable position. So you deprive them of their clothing. You tell them when to eat. You tell them when to get up, go to bed, the lights on, lights off. And they're saying actually you're priming them almost in a form of brainwashing, not quite brainwashing, but you're saying you're making them susceptible, almost hypnosis. And he started talking about the words you can use and why not use that time to for your advantage, basically, and sort of start giving them positive words, positive thoughts, positive lookout for the future. And the whole thing just fascinated me. And I went away and I bought the book. Am I allowed to show you the book?
Yes, of course.
So this is the book that got me into NLP, Magic in Practice, by Garner Thompson, which with Dr. Khaled Khan. I've never met them, but this is the second version, which is even bigger now. But anyway, so I read that cover to cover and I started using a little bit of NLP, what I thought was NLP, with few patients in clinic. So if they came in, I'd use the yes set. So I'd try and get three positive responses, get them on my side, and then I'd have a chat with them in clinic. So I started doing that quite early on. And also thinking about the words I was using and making sure they were positive. And then I had my breakdown, three or so years ago now. So I went off work for 6 months with burnout, work stress, and had counselling and all that kind of thing. And then actually I thought I'd change career. It was about time to change career. I'd had enough of medicine, lost my enthusiasm. Knew I liked NLP and Googled NLP and guess who I found?
So yes,
I came on the course. I think the first course was last January. And it did, yes, I did the diploma, loved it, and immediately booked on practitioner, loved it. Got an interest-free credit card and booked the master's. And I have to say, I'm still paying for it. But anyway, it was worth it. And I have to say, of all the counselling and everything I've had, it is quite mind-blowing. And although I think I was interested in the linguistics from a kind of work point of view and coaching, the timeline therapy, the meta programs, communication models, so many things have had such a massive impact that now all I want to do is share it with everybody.
I love it. So, I love it. Do you know, I'd forgotten about that story about how you found NLP. I know you've told me that before, but I'd forgotten that it was actually through work that you first discovered it.
Yeah, a long, long time ago. It could be a good 15 years, well, 10 to 15 years ago that I'm not sure what the date is in this book. It's quite early, I think. So
So one of the things that I'm really interested to ask you about is the difference that your language skills have made to the patients that you work with. And I know that from a, I'm not going to get the words right, so forgive me, because I'm That's not okay. a medic, as you know. But when you go into the anaesthetic room to put someone under a general anaesthetic, I know you now only get involved in some of the most complex cases. And you know, and I can imagine that that's quite scary for the patient. And I know it's like old hat for you because you've been doing this for years. But, you know, I remember when I had an operation, so this is going back a good few years ago, and I remember lying in the room, wherever it is that you put us out. And I remember listening to my heartbeat, and they had to turn the heart monitor off because my heart went racing because I could hear my heartbeat. Yeah. And I was getting so agitated. And because, as you say, it's really scary. Like, you are probably at one of your most vulnerable in those moments, because you are handing your life over to people that you don't know and entrusting that they're going to take good care of you. And so I can only relate to it from a patient's perspective. But I'm guessing that you see that a lot in day to day. In terms of what you do?
Oh, definitely. You know, it is, you're giving, I've been anaesthetised myself loads of times. And actually, I was more scared when I became an anaesthetist, being anaesthetised by my colleagues. But because you are in a very vulnerable position, and you are kind of handing over control and responsibility for your life to somebody else. So you need that massive rapport, which is, so the first things that LLPs help me with is gaining that massive rapport quickly. We've always done our best, but I think having done it, I'm far more conscious of the words I use. I will, certainly when I see them, so we see patients for about 5-10 minutes before they go to theatre, which is not long to gain their trust, confidence before you go into an operation. And we ask them all the routine questions, but now I've rephrased how I do that. So now I'll go in and I'll just have a chat with them, and I'll be listening out for you know, are they going to be kinesthetic, visual, etc., listening out for that. Then I'll ask them what they're concerned about, and also I might ask them what do they want to do later on that day, you know, what are they looking forward to. So I want them to get them to look past the event and into the future, so that they're already thinking ahead of how they're going to be later. So I'll do that for a bit. And then when I get them into theatre, getting them off to sleep, I'll again reinforce the things that they want to do later on. So I start saying to them, well, I put the drip in, oh, you know, what have you missed out on this morning? What would you normally have for breakfast? You know, a cup of tea, cup of coffee. Oh, yeah, we can get you a cup of tea for afterwards. You know, how'd you take it? Milk, two sugars? You know, so I'm getting them thinking about that sort of thing. And, you know, or who's collecting you? And we'll start talking about the future. And then as they go off to sleep, it's all positive words. So I try and avoid pain, saying anything like pain. And it's just very much, I almost try and use some hypnotic phrases as well. So I've started saying, imagine the situation. So you're lying there, all monitored up, and I've got the oxygen on them. And I'll be saying, as you lie there, listening to my voice, listening to the beeps of the machine. I'll do it nice and softly. Or I might say, you know, feeling the drug going up your arm, something that I know is, you know, like say, definitely true. And then I'll say to them, you're going to wake up really comfortable, looking forward to that cup of tea or whatever we've planned. And I'll just spin it that way. And hopefully by the time they're just drifting off to sleep, I do it while I'm giving the drugs. So they're kind of drifting off anyway. And I think it makes a difference. And to be honest, why wouldn't you try it? You know, why would you start saying negative words? And one of the things I'm doing at work quite a lot now is doing a lot of teaching, because I'm in theatre. I have an assistant with me, anaesthetic assistant, and I also have a trainee sometimes. And, you know, you put the drip in and they'll go, sharp scratch. And I'll go, no, please. So, you know, and I'll try and distract them and say, you know, I'm just going to chat to you, you know, and then I'll pop the drip in. And half the time they don't notice. And then I'll, you know, we'll be saying about the blood pressure. They'll say, oh, the blood pressure cuff hurts. And I'll go, but, so a turning word, you know, we need this information to look after you, and you're going to be really comfortable and off to sleep. So I just have to be quick in stopping my colleagues saying things. And I'm actually planning a session for the recovery staff, because when the patient wakes up and we transfer them to recovery, the first thing they're trained to ask is, are you in pain? Do you feel sick? And I kind of think, oh, all that work I've done to get you to wake up comfortable, relaxed. And the first thing they say is, and I've been trying to teach the nurses, and I'm planning the presentation at the moment, just to say, you know, are you comfortable? Is there anything I can get you? Because if you tell someone, are you in pain? They'll go, actually, yes, it hurts. Or, you know, it's very easy to make someone feel sick. If they didn't feel sick, they might well feel sick afterwards. Or I'll say, right, you can have that cup of tea with two sugars. And the nurse will say, oh, no, no, you might be sick. And I'm like, nope. So I've got a lot of work to do with staff at work. But I did the talk to my colleagues, my consultant colleagues and the trainees. And it was all very positive. There was one colleague who is quite negative who said he thinks all this positivity is ridiculous. But I thought, fine, that's your opinion. But I totally believe it's positive language is the way to go. You know, I just think it's, and the more I tell people and the more people see it happening and the response from the patients, they just see it and they start thinking, oh, why did I say that? So I love it. It's fascinating. It's just,
there's so much that you've just said in that last bit, and I'm like, oh my god, I need to ask you about that, and I need to ask you. So I'm going to get you to go back a little bit, if that's okay.
You know what? I
know I love it, and I love listening to you talk about how you use NLP at work, because you know, you are, for me, you are one of those amazing examples of where you come into the training room with me. I deliver the practitioner, master practitioner content, and I can see you sat there going, but how do I use that at work, and how can I use that to help patients, and how can I use that to help trainees, and all of that. And I just love when anybody comes into the training room and they take the kit I give them and they make it their own and they use it to essentially improve the outcomes and, you know, for other people. I just think it's amazing that we can do that. So I want to go back to the very beginning, because I want to ask you some NLP bits, because you've just explained all of that brilliantly. Now, right at the beginning, you said when you go and meet someone for the very first time and you're having your 10 minutes with them before they even go to theatre, and you're listening out for whether they're visual, auditory, kinesthetic or auditory digital. Now, a lot of our listeners will be familiar with those terms because they've either done NLP training or they've followed the podcast for some time. Now, in terms of why would we do that and what is the benefit to doing that, I'm guessing, obviously you can tell me, but I'm guessing you're listening for these preferences. So if someone's more kinesthetic, touchy-feely, someone's more visual about what it's going to look like, I'm guessing you're listening for that right up at the beginning before they go anywhere near theatre, because that will then help you frame the questions and the commentary that you give them as you're giving them the drugs. I'm guessing that's how you use it.
I'm basically trying to, I want them to, I think how you phrased it, you want people like want you to be like them, isn't it? So I want them to feel that I'm on their side, that I'm one of them, that I understand them and that I can help them. And it's not always easy to do, I have to say, because it is quite a short time and we do have to get some fairly direct questions, which is sadly one of the downsides, I suppose, of a medical history taking. It's, are you this and this? But if you do get a chance to listen to odd phrases they say and think, oh, okay, I'll come back to that, or you might get them to enlarge upon it, and then you I'm just noticing I'm kinesthetic, aren't I, because I'm waving my hands everywhere. I'll put my hands down, right? I'll cross my fingers. So once you get to know that, then it helps me in theatre, and I can gauge how I, if they're anxious, you can rephrase things hopefully to suit them.
Yeah.
But so I have to say,
it's the tailoring then, isn't it? It's the tailoring of the communication. Because I think you're absolutely right. I think, and this isn't just in anaesthetics, this is in life in general. Mm. We all use our preference in the way we communicate with other people. And you and I are both kinesthetic. So, you know, we're going to sit in, we're going to have a chat for an hour, and it's going to be
amazing. Our hands around.
And we're going to wave our hands, and we're going to be all emotional and passionate about what we're talking about. And so that would work very well. But when you're communicating with someone that doesn't have your preference, sometimes just being able to tweak your language so that it lands in the right way for that person can really reach those wheels of motion. And in your particular case, in quite a critical moment, when you can really help them. And I think that's although most people listening to this podcast are not going to be working in anaesthetics, I think that's something that most people can relate to in that subtlety of tailoring your communication so that it lands better for that person. Mm. So as you say, definitely, the person feels like, that's on the receiving end, feels like you get them. And, you know, and as you say, building rapport is such a key thing. You know, if you, so we know in NLP, rapport leads to trust. And in your case, trust is critical to you know, what you can do. I'm, you know, if I'm lying on a bed in a theatre and you're knocking me out and I'm panicking because I don't trust you and I don't think you're going to do a good job, that's going to be harder, make your job harder. It's going to make the result for me more challenging. You know, so there's like direct benefits to patients for you putting in that effort.
Definitely.
And I know, you know, from what you're saying, you know, you did your talk the other week and, you know, you get skeptics. We all get skeptics all the time.
But yeah, I think it doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah, right. So it doesn't bother you. And I think
they can believe what they want to believe. Beliefs aren't true. I said they can believe what they want to believe.
I love it. She's been well-trained. But what's brilliant is what you've done is gone, do you know what? I'm going to help support the people that are interested in getting better patient outcomes. And if one of the ways to do that is teaching them some basic language skills and they're receptive to that, you know, and I think like you've said just now, you know, when people see things for themselves, that's when it really starts to hit home, doesn't it? When people start seeing the difference that it makes, then they start doing it and seeing the difference that it makes. I'm guessing you've probably got a few examples of people that you've shared this with that have gone on to use it.
Oh, definitely. Because if I have a trainee with me and I'll explain before I do it what I'm doing so that people don't say negative words. And then once the patient's asleep and obviously stable and everything, and we might have a little chat about why I did that and why I reframe various things. And you suddenly see them starting to think about it, thinking, oh yeah, of course, it makes sense. And I think it just helps with communication in all areas. So even with colleagues, you know, when they go home and talk to their other half, I think some of them have gone back to, oh yeah, you know, and it's subtleties that make such a difference. And if I'm allowed to waffle on a little bit more, another workplace I've used them. So I do the complaints for the department, which I love, it's fascinating. And again, one of the reasons I love it is because often it's a communication issue, and I'll see the letter of complaint and I'll go through it now and I will mark out whether they are kinesthetic, visual, AD, etc. And then I'll respond in that manner. So I'm sure the people that I send the complaints to must think, why is she changing her style of letter every time? But it's geared to them. And because a lot of the complaints I say are communication, and if at least I can communicate to understand them, you know, that's, we're halfway there. And yeah, there's just so many places you can use NLP and linguistics. It's, yeah.
Amazing. So let's talk a little bit about so you talked there again about not using negative words. And I just, I want to rinse everything you've said for as much value as I can help share with all our listeners, because there's so many golden nuggets in what you said earlier. So you talked about someone, like, so one of your trainees saying, you know, or sharp scratch coming, when the nurses, when someone's first coming around and recovering, the nurses are saying, do you feel sick? Now, we know as NLPers that those, just picking those two phrases on their own, they are very, human beings are hugely suggestible. We know that. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that we are hugely suggestible, especially in a situation where someone is vulnerable and there is an authority in the room that you are entrusting your life to, essentially. So it just adds further to it. But anyway, in language in general, when you make the suggestion of, oh, there's a sharp scratch coming, or do you feel sick, they are suggestions that someone will in a moment experience a scratch. Guess what? It's going to be more painful if you've told them there's a scratch coming. And like what you said earlier, which is you don't say to that, some of the people don't even notice you've put it in.
I know.
You know, and then again, like you say, in the recovery room, when a nurse says, do you feel sick? I have to go inside and ask myself, hold on, do I feel sick? And, you know, and a little bit of a feeling in my tummy, I might go, oh yes, I feel sick. Whereas if you hadn't asked me to check in on, do I feel sick, I probably wouldn't have noticed it.
And then they'll immediately give you a drug, you see, for it. So you're giving drugs. Oh yeah. So again, it's another reason, you know, you might not need as many drugs Sorry, you continue asking.
No, not at all. No, I want you to tell us. Because like I said at the beginning of the interview, I know a little bit about it, only from what you've told me over the time we've spent together. But I think it's fascinating. And as you say, using what in NLP we were called more positive directionalized language, you know, are you feeling comfortable, or how are you? Or, you know, those kind of things are so much better. Have you got kind of other words of pearls of wisdom in that area of that language stuff?
Well, in the with the sharp scratch one, so going back to that one. So I say what I do now is I'm chatting away and I'll be getting ready to do the drip. And I will say to the patient in a moment, while we're chatting, I will pop a drip in and start, you know, give you some drugs to make you more comfortable. And then I'll just do it. Whereas, and I did a talk to some very junior doctors a while back now, and they said, oh, I was being, I can't think, almost said I was lying to the patients because I wasn't telling them sharp scratch. I wasn't warning them. And I said, well, I have warned them. I'm telling them, I've told them I'm going to put it in. I just haven't told them the moment it's going in. So I'm not lying to them. So we had this big discussion about whether my language was actually wrong. But a few people have tried it since, and, you know, it's some people are really anxious and it's been really hard to do it then. But again, there's still little words you can use just to soften it. I'm trying, well, you usually have a positive outcome for it. So, you know, if they're saying it's going to hurt, I might repeat their words, say, you may feel it might hurt, however, or but, you know, I'm going to then give you something really comfortable, going to get you off to sleep. Let's get this operation done. And afterwards, you can have that cup of tea, cup of coffee, we'll get you back to the ward. And then, oh yeah, who is it picking you up? Yeah, we'll get them down and pick you up. And oh, what was that program you're going to watch tonight? Oh yeah, you know, it's a really good series. You know, it's all this sort of chat just to relax them. And yeah, in the post-op, with the feeling sick and things, again, it's the difficulty is the nurses have a form that they have to put 1 to 5 if they're feeling sick, pain, etc., pain scores. And again, it's trying to, I've been talking to the pain team about how we can, again, pain team, you know, we have an acute pain team and a chronic pain team, you know, it's of all the negative words. And I was chatting to them about it, about how to just change the wording, because you call the pain team, which sounds a bit, you know, you're going to give them pain, but so we need to work on that phrase. But yeah, just words to, or even just to distract them, get them some food. You know, if they came into the recovery area and the nurse said, oh, you look very sprightly, we'll have to get that drink for you. You know, they might suddenly think, oh, I'm looking better than I am. You know, rather than, you know, treating them like a patient. My aim is to treat them like a human, a person, you know, get them some food, get them a drink, get them up, read a magazine, get them out of bed and get them home, and they'll recover far quicker. That's my personal opinion anyway.
I love it. So I want to go back to the bit about the word, okay, but, because you've mentioned it a few times. And yeah, obviously, again, you and I know what that's all about. But I just want to share this little golden nugget with all the listeners that we've got. What we're doing, for those of you that are listening that maybe aren't aware, that the word but is what we call a negation. And in essence, it's what we call a deletion as well. And when someone says something and then we stick the word but in, and however has the same impact, it essentially deletes what has happened before at an unconscious level, because all language is processed at the unconscious level. And so when Kate was talking about just now about using the word but in the middle to delete it and then have the client focus on possibility, I say client, patient in your case, but focus on possibility or something positive, that's what we want for people. We want people to be focused on possibility and can do and will do and all of that stuff. And I think, you know, you say it and I love it because it's so second nature to you. Now, you just say it like it's like old hat and it's like, whoa, hold on.
I have to think about it now to explain it.
But it's so true, right? And it makes such a difference. You know, if you have a patient that's lying there saying to you, I'm really scared, and you can go, I know you feel really scared, repeat back so they know that you've heard them. But, and as you say, just imagine having that cup of tea up when this is all over with your two sugars and you're sat up in bed reading your favourite magazine. And all of a sudden, you take my mind from focusing on I'm scared to focused on I'm going to be having a cup of tea later. I like a cup of tea. Mm. Like, to you and I, that sounds obvious, but to a lot of people, it's really not. And I guess that's the struggle you've had in your profession, is helping people to see that.
Well, these phrases are ingrained in us from the day one we go to medical school. You know, sharp scratch, are you in pain? You know, where's it go? Everything's very direct and probably quite negative words. But going back to the point about the pain and not when they're scared and things, I do sometimes say to them as well, is what are you scared about? Tell me. So at least I can go into more depth about, which is not quite the linguistics, but I can at least address their concerns. So again, they feel I'm acknowledging them rather than just, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine. So I do yes. that as well.
Just a good little bit of meta model questioning, right? Because we know from our, because it is language, even though you've got so, our yeah. language, it is. But it is because, you know, and you'll know this from the training room, but I always talk about the example of little boy comes home from school and says, everybody hates me. Yeah. That is a generalized problem. And if you try and find a solution to everybody hates me, you're on a fool's errand because you're never going to find a solution. And actually, unless you use some question, more specific questions, which comes from the work of Virginia Satir and Meta Model, which is what specifically, how specifically, who specifically, when specifically, and drill into that, you can then find a solution to that more specific problem in exactly the way you've just described. So, yeah, see, you're even doing language and you don't even realise you're doing it. I love it. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So for you, then, I'm guessing it's fair to say that perfecting your linguistic skills and really focusing in on that has had a massive impact for your patients.
Well, I believe so. Obviously, it's going to be very hard to do, you know, the medical world always like control trials and things. And there's just no way you can really probably do it. It doesn't have to be a qualitative study. But I think at the end of the day, if I can make a difference to one patient, then that's a difference for that one patient. And some patients are more challenging than others. And sometimes I mess it up and get, you know, in trying to be say the right things, I can mess it up and say the wrong things. You know, if I can help one or two patients and feel from my lists that I'm making a difference, then to me, that's really important. And if people take it on board and I can spread the word and they do it, then, wow, we could all have a very happy world, couldn't we? It'd be lovely and positive.
It would be so right. But you're right, it would be so much better. And, you know, as you quite rightly, and I know flippantly said earlier on in the interview, you know, well, you know, beliefs aren't true anyway. So, you know, he's entitled to his view. But the thing is that, you know, there's a whole placebo thing, and we're not planning to talk about placebo today, but there's a whole placebo thing, which is what is real anyway? And actually, if someone believes that something is going to help, then the chances are it will help, you know, but, you know, how you do your job technically, I'm sure, hasn't changed. It's what's changed is the way you approach it, the way you deal with, as you say, the human that's in front of you. They're not even just a patient to you. They are a human. They are someone that you want the best possible outcome for. And you're going to use every single tool at your disposal as a clinician to give them the best chance. And language is one of those tools.
Well, I almost did a fast phobia modelling clinic once, but the patient refused. So I'm not sure he was at... I don't know if you want to explain cause and effect, but this patient had a massive needle phobia and was getting really anxious and worked up. And I was talking him through it and offered the fast phobia model. And he said, oh, it won't work. And I said, well, do you want, you know, what will the difference be to you? You know, when you got rid of your phobia, how will that change your life? And he said, oh, it'll never go away. No one will be able to help it. And I just thought, this person's at effect and there's no way that it's going to work. And so we didn't bother. But there's, you know, you can do as much as you can.
Yeah, yeah. And as you quite rightly say, you know, there's only so much you can do, and someone needs to want to be helped. Someone, you know, and you and I both know that if he'd got rid of that nail needle phobia, I mean, you know, it would have made your job easier, would have made his a much more pleasant experience. But as you say, you know, he probably didn't want to.
No, it must have been some other secondary gain, possibly. I don't know.
Most probably. And again, you and I have probably been around long enough with NLP now to be able to spot secondary gain. So those of you listening, if you've never heard of secondary gains, the secondary gain is where someone benefits more by hanging on to their problem than they perceive they will benefit by letting it go. Now, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of that particular gentleman or circumstances, but I've seen phobias enough to know that a lot of people get attention through their phobia, and that would be an example of secondary gain. So by having a, you know, a challenging situation like a needle phobia, you know, he probably gets a lot of attention. It may even be something as simple as it's just something to talk about because he doesn't know what else to talk about. You know, it could be all sorts of reasons. And if a client doesn't want to change, they're not going to change. I mean, whether that's in a scenario with you or whether that's in a coaching situation with me, I mean, it, you know, doesn't make any difference, really, does it? It's fascinating. Listen, there's other things I want to talk about, okay. And I can't believe we've been here for this long already. I'm watching.
How long is it? Oh, half an hour. Gosh,
I know, right? And I'm like, oh, we've got to get on talking.
Stick us in a room together, or well, like this, we'll chat forever.
I know, we chat for hours, right? So thank you so much for sharing that, because I know that there will be some people in our wider audience. Because we've hit 10,000 downloads now on the podcast. So this podcast goes into over 90 countries around the world. And so it's quite large now. So chances are that there'll be some people listening that do have a medical background that will find what you've just discussed useful. So thank you for that. Now, I know we talked, and you mentioned this earlier on, that you work quite a lot now. Your role is split between being a consultant anaesthetist and also, you know, having a training and development role. And I know you mentor quite a few trainees. And one of the things that's always struck me about your profession is it is hugely pressurized. I mean, get the job wrong and there are potentially catastrophic implications. You know, people are depending on you to keep them alive, you know. And I can only even start to imagine the pressure that some of those individuals must experience, you know, in the moment of crisis or in the lead up to, you know, what is ahead of them. Then they're concerned about a particularly complex case they've got to deal with and things like that. Now, could you give us maybe a flavour as a mentor how you have found your NLP skills to be useful to help trainees, help people that are at the very beginning of their career, you know, and where have you used it in that sense?
Well, I've had a two-pronged approach in some ways to the trainees, because I've helped the trainees and I'm also training the supervisors to help the trainees and themselves a bit. So in terms of the trainees, in one of my roles, I look after the foundation doctors and a group called clinical fellows. So they're non-training, but often trying to get back into training. So I've set up a lot of teaching sessions with them to do with anxiety, stress, confidence, mindset for interviews. So I've had a running program of direct sort of group teaching. I've done some on Zoom as well for them. And then in terms of more one-to-one, I did ask for volunteers of who wanted some coaching. And I quite early on had a trainee who was thinking of quitting medicine, was a bit disillusioned. And we did a belief change and we did anchor. And he hasn't been back to me since, and he's still in the job and loving it, so which is great. And then I've been doing, I did my first timeline therapy session with someone the other day, which was fantastic. I went to write and say, so yeah. It went really well, and they're very inspired and happy, and so that's great. So I'm doing the sort of coaching in small doses with some of them. But I think one of the things I love is the teaching and training, which is an area when I do get my business up and running properly. I think that's because I did a master's in medical education a few years ago, and I just find if I can teach a group and spread the word, it's a sort of a quicker way of getting things out there. And the tools I use, so a lot of the time I'll do the cause effect, which I think is powerful. And the NLP communication model, when I start explaining that and you sort of see the penny drop and think, oh, that's what, you know, so that's great. And then we might go into some more stress busters and positive thoughts. I even did a session when I took my shredder in from home, and at the end I got them all. They all looked at me a bit strangely and all got them to write a negative belief about themselves or thought, and they all had to come and shred it. And then they all got a piece of paper, they had to write a positive one and take it home. And they're not very great at feeding back at the time, but I got some lovely emails later on about how inspiring it was, so that was really nice. So
amazing.
So that's, and then on terms of the trainers, I've taught the trainers about meta programs and the NLP communication. And in terms of meta programs, one of the key things I've found is some trainees need more support in terms of, you know, they like to keep checking if they're doing the right management, the right plan. And I get feedback as a supervisor, sort of senior supervisor, saying, oh, this trainee needs more help. They keep asking if they're doing okay. And I, when I did the teaching, I said, well, do you know what their frame of reference is? They might be one of these people that actually need to be told they're doing a good job, do that a few times to gain their confidence, whereas somebody else might just know they've done a good job. So I explain that in the NLP communication model, and just to try and get them to think about what's going through the trainee's mind. And I'm trying to use it in all areas if I can. I think I do everything with a little snippet of NLP.
I love it. And I just love listening to you talk. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I had no idea that you'd put that program together of some of the techniques and listening to you using the conscious mind belief change process. So Kate, the shredding example Kate just used, if you haven't heard the podcast episode I did in series 2, if you go back to series 2 of the podcast, I did a whole episode about belief changes. And in that episode, I teach you how to do what Kate just talked about, which is shredding your old limiting belief and then bringing on board a new one. It's a brilliant little process.
Something's so simple, isn't it?
And sometimes the simple stuff is what works best, right?
Yeah, definitely.
If it's too complicated, people tend not to use it, or they get lost in it. And you know, I just think it's amazing. It's just fab. And to hear you using the communication model, because I remember when I teach it on the prac course, and that light bulb moment, people go off in their head. And you know, essentially, again, for those of you that haven't heard, the NLP communication model essentially explains how your mind works, how your mind deletes thoughts and generalizes information, how it then goes on to filter it, and how that then brings about our thinking and our emotions, and all of those things lead to our behaviors and outcomes. And I think I covered that in a previous episode as well. It's just phenomenal, isn't it? When you can start to empower people to better manage themselves and better communicate with others, it's just amazing. Are there any particular moments with trainees that stick out in your mind? Obviously, I don't want you to mention any names, but that really stick out in your mind, that you think, do you know what, that was a good day. That was a good day at work, and I can really feel like I made a difference there.
There's been lots of days when I've had a trainee with me and I've just mentioned it, and then they keep asking questions, and then they start to try it, and a little bit clunky initially with the language, and then they start to get it. And I think they feel great about it. Because I think, you know, when you're saying negative words all day, you know, pain, stress, hurt, all this kind of thing, vomiting, it must affect us as well, I'm sure. So actually, by getting people to say positive words to patients, it must resonate. And I think generally everyone feels happier. I know certainly I found that being positive at work has massively helped me, whereas I used to get stressed, well, before I went off sick, very easily with just walking in and getting frustrated. Now I walk in, and even if it is a bit dysfunctional day, I'll come at the end of the day, I'll think, wow, actually, we got there, we all had a great time. And so I'm constantly spinning positives. So some people might find me really annoying, I don't know, but I don't think so,
because I know the difference. Like you say, it's a difference it makes for you as well. You know, being able to reframe in your mind. I mean, I know it's one of the things I noticed about when I had timeline therapy myself. All of a sudden, like, some of the small stuff just didn't seem to bug me in the same way. I tend to kind of just could ride with it a little bit better. Don't get me wrong, there's still things that frustrate me, irritate me, or whatever. But it tends to not be the small stuff that used to really get me. I know that since use the C word, and it's not
Christmas. Oh, yes.
So obviously, as someone that works within the NHS and works with other professionals in the hospital and patients as well, obviously the last 6 months, I mean, I can only start to imagine what it must have been like for you and your colleagues, you know, to have to go through that. And I'm just curious as to how your NLP toolkit has both helped you manage probably one of the biggest challenges in our lifetime, but also how you've been using it to help others get through this pandemic, whatever we want to call it. So COVID-19 hasn't escaped any of us. But I'm just curious as to how you think NLP has played a role to helping you stay on the straight and narrow, and how you've used it to help others.
So in terms of me, I think, again, it's that comes back to the cause-effect equation in some ways. So, you know, COVID's out there. I remember you using the example of Brexit when we were on the course. You know, there's people that have blamed Brexit for everything, and then there's people that can just, well, they can't change it, it's happening, let's move on. And I think I found that with COVID. I thought, you know, I can't control it. Well, I suppose there's simple things we can control with, you know, mask, distance, etc. But I can't control the fact it's out there. So what can I control? Well, I control how I feel about it. So I can take my precautions. I can take precautions for others. I can be more positive and just still get on with life. So I took on, just as COVID started, I took on the support lead role for the junior doctors in the trust, and immediately thought, okay, well, what can we do that doesn't involve meetings? So I did some videos in this room, actually, with the kits that were suggested on your courses. And I did some introduction to me, and then I did a series of stress busters and just did them from here and in a sort of fairly casual way. And I managed to set up a site at work that they started that we could access on our phone. So I set up a wellbeing group on there and we got those videos onto that so anyone can access them from the trust on a mobile. You can see me talking about stress busters and then I've been putting lots of information on there. I set up some hypnosis sessions, which was good fun. So for the junior doctors, because I think they had a really tough time, they got moved around to different departments and it was quite unsettling. And we had, I think they did an amazing job. And what I did with them is we did some Zoom hypnosis that they could just log in. I followed instructions to make sure they were safe, etc. And they went down really well and I recorded them. So again, they went on to the mobile uploaded so they could access them whenever they wanted. So we did a couple of those. And afterwards, people who had never had it just said it was lovely and they slept better, which was, you know, the key because I think some of them were not sleeping. So I'm actually sort of really enjoying the hypnosis. I think there's just the subtleties, again, of what you can use. Tempted to use it on the puppy to get her to sleep, but
remind me to tell you about the time we hypnotized Rosie, my dog, by accident. And okay. That was a master practice course in the training room.
Get to sleep with
got a brand new puppy.
Got a brand new puppy, I know. So but yeah, so that worked really well. And I'm trying to think what else we did. I did lots of talks, so I did some presents. So I set up a teaching program via Zoom as well, recorded it, and I must admit, I think pretty much every teaching session I've done always includes cause effects, the NLP communication model. I don't think I've got metaphors. Yes. I use metaphors for everything. I know when I first did them on the course, I was thinking, oh, this is such a pain. How can I start a talk with a metaphor? Everyone's just going to look at me in a stupid way. But the first one I did was to my consultant colleagues and I did a talk and I picked some metaphor from when I was a student being a bit of an idiot with rice. And jumping over the back, leaving rice on the hob boiling while I ran to the nearest curry house because I didn't want to pay for rice and get my curry. But anyway, yes, you can imagine how that ended. So I did that story. And I think some of my colleagues just looking at me thinking, what's she on about? And then obviously stopped at 80% of the story, did my talk. And then at the end, I asked any questions. Hand goes up. What happened?
I love it because I tell you this is going to happen in the training room. I teach you metaphors and everybody always looks at me like I've gone off.
I know.
There will be someone that needs to know the end of your metaphor story.
But I don't do a talk without them. And now I've built up from one because I was a bit nervous doing one. I thought there's no way I'm going to get away with three. And now I do three. So we just had all our junior doctors arrive at the trust. So must have done about 200 junior doctors or so. And I did the support talk. I started off with three metaphors. I have to say, it's not quite got, still working on writing them myself, but I've done loads of searching and just twisted some and made them to how I want them. But yeah, so they get three short metaphors. And yeah, it's amazing. You get to the end and they ask questions and this is one little hand goes up and it's just lovely. And yeah, it's amazing. The talks, I think I've massively grown in confidence myself talking because I used to feel a bit underconfident. And now I don't know what it is. I'm getting so much feedback saying, oh, will you come and talk for this? Will you come and talk for that? And I'm thinking, and all I can think I've changed is the metaphors, probably using the format, maybe my stance like you taught us as well. But that's only ever happened because of the courses. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're most welcome. You're most welcome. I just think it's amazing. I mean, I could sit here all day and listen to you talk about the difference it's made for you, the difference it's made for those around you, from your patients to your trainees, to your colleagues, to other staff members. You know, and as you know, this is one of the reasons why I do what I do. It's a little bit like, when you talked earlier about your own practice, if you like, there's part of of what you do, which is a bit of one-to-one work, and then there is the training and the workshops. And that was a similar decision that I had to make when I first came into NLP. You know, was I going to focus on, one-to-one work and helping, let's say, a dozen people a year, and that would be amazing for those dozen people? Or actually, do I use my NLP skills in training and workshops, which enables me to help hundreds of people every year? And I just love it to sit here as someone that's trained you in NLP to think, you know, we spent however many days together training, and to think of the hundreds of, you know, new medical students and colleagues and patients that have gone on through osmosis to benefit from something that I shared with you, and you in turn have gone on to share with them. And I'm sure the trainees will go on to share with other trainees as they go through the ranks. And that just fills me up. Gives me a lovely warm fuzzy feeling to think that it's making a real difference for people, and thank you for doing it and persevering, because I know you've had challenges along the way with skeptics, and as you say, sometimes you just got to kind of leave them to one side and focus on the people that do want to take advantage of your skills and do want to make a difference. And
they'll come around eventually when they see everybody else is doing really well.
Say again?
They'll come around eventually when they realize that everybody else is getting great results. And no complaints, including lovely patients that really have.
Yeah. And they'll be going, Kay, any chance you could spare time for a coffee? and you'll be like, yeah, that'll be one.
I have to say, one of the challenges of anything with the NLP through COVID has been in theatre. Now we're all wearing a mask. It's been much harder to get the rapport, because most of the time we're now, I almost look like Darth Vader when I've got my gear on. So I've got two filters here, a big mask and gown and stuff, and we can hardly hear each other, let alone the patient. So it's, I have to say, recently that's been quite a struggle, but I think it makes the pre bit so much more important. But even then, you're communicating with just your eyes, really. So
it is hard when you cover half your face with a mask. It really does impact your ability to do sensory acuity, as we call it in NLP, noticing those minute changes. I can imagine that. I clearly don't do any job anywhere near what you do, but I know it's made a big impact. And we've had to adjust in the training room, and we're now having to wear masks and face visors and all that, and it's a fraction of what you have to experience, I know, but it does have an impact, doesn't it? But you've got to use the tools that you have got available. And as you say, you just have to think creatively about, okay, well, I can't do that in the way I would normally have done it. So, but how can I? Like you say, a little bit more reliance on the chat with them before they go to theatre, but then again, that comes back to the cause effect equation, right? Being at cause, thinking, so how can I find a way? There has to be a way. I just need to be resourceful enough to find it, which is just amazing. It's just amazing. Oh my goodness, look at the time. Crazy. I say this on every episode because I sit here and I could do another whole hour with you and go, tell me more about this and tell
the
me
puppy
more.
Puppy might wake up by then, though.
I know, yeah.
We might be time out for loo trips.
You'll be like, hold on, everybody, I'll be back. But no, seriously, thank you so much, because I know you are super, super busy. So I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to share with me and the rest of our community just what a difference NLP has made for you, your patients, and the people that you work with. So thank you. It's very much appreciated. So I've got some quick fire questions for you.
Oh, no.
You'll be familiar with the format of these podcasts, having to listen to several yourself.
I wish I'd remembered. I wish I'd written down the questions now.
But you have no idea what I'm about to ask, right?
So, I trust my unconscious mind.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right then. So let's go. Let's see what we can make of these quick fire questions. Okay. So first of all, nice, easy one. I think it's easy. What's your favourite word?
Happy. That just came out.
I love it. Our unconscious mind. So yeah, cool. So if you could be any age you like, what age would you be and why?
I'd be as I am now.
Would you?
Because I've learned so much. I think your life goes up and down, but I wouldn't, I wouldn't change anything now. And looking forward to the future and being more positive and having my goals in my timeline. And I'm not looking back, I'm looking forward.
I love it. What does unleash your potential mean to you?
Opportunity. New opportunities, definitely. That was another word that just came straight up.
She's like on it. She trusts her own conscious mind these days. The KI met on the very first course.
Oh, gosh, I know. Can you imagine it? Completely.
You would have had to have analysed it and dissected it. And oh, dear. I love it. I love it. What one word would you use to describe our training courses?
Awesome.
I'll take that. I'll take that. Thank you so much. I very much appreciate, as I say, your time. Now, I know you're in the process of setting up your coaching business, and you're going to be offering some training and workshops and private work around one-to-ones and things like that. So if people have listened to the episode today and have got questions for you, would they be interested to learning more about how you've been using NLP in your role or in using you? I know you're hugely popular for talks now, so I'm sure there's going to be lots of people be like, Kate, could you come over and do a talk for us on this and so on. If anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So the best one is the email I set up for the business. So that's info, nice and simple, at UCM, which stands for Unconscious Mind. So UCM coaching and training.co.uk. So all one word, .co.uk. But yeah, I spent ages trying to think of it. And then I thought, that's what it's all about, isn't it? UCM.
I love it. I love it. So just say it again, the email address is
info at UCM coaching and training.co.uk.
Perfect. And as in A-N-D, not an ampersand.
Which one's saying?
So A-N-D as in and when you're writing it.
And training. Yeah, A-N-D. Yeah. All one word.
Just checking.
I should have written it out to put a little card up, but
I could have put it on the screen, but we won't worry about it. Our listeners around the world wouldn't have seen it anyway because they're listening on their favourite podcast platform. So, yeah, thank you so much. Now, if you're listening to this podcast on the podcast platforms, you may or may not know that we have a Facebook group called the NLP Talks Podcast Community. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're not in our community, then head on over to Facebook and get yourself into the NLP Talks Podcast Community. It's where we do the pre-release. So as you're listening to this on a podcast platform, there are some people that have already heard the episode because they got into the group. So come on over and join us on Facebook. And if you're interested in finding out more about any of our courses here at Unleash Your Potential, then feel free to go on over to our website and download the brochure. And it'll contain all the information about the courses that we run, including our online courses, live training. And you can download the brochure if you go to unleashyourpotential.org.uk/brochure. So that's unleashyourpotential.org.uk/brochure. You will be able to download the brochure and find out about all the courses that Kay has mentioned today. So Kay, thank you so much again. I very much appreciate your time and for sharing your expertise. I'll leave you go. Enjoy the rest of your day with your puppy.
Thank you very much.